For April 14th, 2017, we talk about the Bayonetta PC re-release, Steven Sausage Roll, and we ask you about your favorite side content in games. Welcome to Level 192. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meissman.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. If you're listening and I met you this past weekend at the Midwest Gaming Classic in Milwaukee, hello. Very happy to have you here. It was nice to meet you.
How was the
you
turnout?
You don't know that. Was there, hold on. Was there even one not nice person that you met? Or were they all nice?
They were all pretty nice.
Oh, okay. Well, then I guess you can't say that.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
We can make it a blanket statement.
Yeah, all of the people who were already listening were just complete, just kind of sweethearts. And the new people who hadn't heard of us were either indifferent and just grabbed a pin, or they listened intently and said, "Hey, I'll listen to your shows."
To be fair, when you say grab a pin, was this like in self-defense? Like,
yeah,
I was coming at him
pretty strong. I took my coat and I flared it out like I was trying to scare off a bear just to make myself look really big.
See, now I'm just imagining like the core defense mechanism. It's like that like lizard with the frills, except the coat.
I'm imagining a
like
priest
if you
boots.
Suddenly startle him. That's why there's never video when he's streaming on Hexgrind.
Yep. Just I've got a foot switch to mute the mic for when I spit venom at the screen.
No, you guys made some upgrades to the Watch Out for Fireballs booth, and now that's completely literal.
Oh yes. Yep, it's totally like a white lion show up there. Just fucking nuts.
You know, you say that, but we could easily rig up some pyrotechnics.
It's tricky. You can only do once in the Sheraton, and then they not so kindly ask you to not come back. No, it was great. I met a few longtime people. I met Brad Carey. He came out.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Met Garrett, another person who's around. And those are the two. Okay, so this is the dangerous game that you play by calling out the like longtime interactors. You kind of diminish the people who are, you know, pretty quiet and just listen. So I do not mean to do that, but it was very nice to meet both Brad and Garrett. And Brad Garrett, he was there. He was all like, my brother Raymond.
I feel like you should just get a listing of the top most common names and just like rainbow statement it. You know, just read several of them and you probably have most of the people.
Just compress it down into like 2 seconds of audio. Yeah. No, but it was very good. The turnout was fantastic. The live show went very well. It was nice hanging out with people at a pretty cool bar that was geeky but not aggressively so. It was a good time. Then I drove home. I think almost all in one go, and then got incredibly sick.
Aww. Yeah. Decompression blues.
Yeah, pretty much. But I'm back. It is very good to be back home. I like going to those things and pretending to be a person who can be good around people for a while, but a long weekend, I think, is all that I have in me.
Got to then go home and molt.
Yeah, pretty much. I have to just squeeze off all the skin that was exposed to other people. Yeah. No, but yeah, it was fantastic. And that's really my only banterable.
Entman's banterables.
Banterables, yeah. David, well, what's up with you? It's been a while since you've been on.
Yeah, not too much. I flew back home to, back to my parents' home in Ohio from San Francisco. So that was, as always, not fun at all.
Oh yeah.
did was kind of interesting. Had a number of Hell's Angels on my flight back home, so that was kind of interesting. Yeah, yeah.
How could you tell that they were affiliated with that?
They were wearing the, so I don't watch enough Sons of Anarchy, the vest.
they're wearing the colors.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Best line I've ever heard, though, is like one of them, you know, sits down with these people, and they're looking, a little nervous. It's like, oh, relax, you're on a flight with an angel. I'm like, okay, that was kind of funny.
Yeah, pretty good. So did they just move their bikes across the country in a horse trailer?
I'm presuming this. That or I like to imagine that they just pulled like an Expendables at some point while I was sleeping. They just kind of drove the bikes out the like back door and like parachuted down on them.
Yeah, why is this plane suddenly empty? Yeah.
But no, other than that, just looking for work in the city. By which I mean now Cincinnati. Yeah. Any city.
Yeah.
Except for Detroit.
You can buy a house. I think they give you money with a house up there.
Oh,
it's definitely like, discounted.
Yeah.
How far are we from like there? RoboCop?
I mean, I don't know how far we are, but we're advancing pretty rapidly. Like we're accelerating.
I'm still hoping for the matchup, RoboCop versus Jensen.
Neither of them asked for this. Yeah. Oh man. Ben, how about you? You said you were feeling under the weather.
I was as well. I'm not exactly sure what may have caused it, but I'm speculating that it might be I did karaoke over the weekend for one of my friend's birthday parties, which was a lot of fun. Yeah. But perhaps that threw out my voice.
Ben,
but,
you gotta stop licking the microphone.
Look, you do your karaoke game how you want to do it. I'll do it my way.
I'm gonna step in here and say, however much that disgusts me, Ben has a ritual, and you have to respect that.
Speaking of rituals, I also instituted. I made everyone sing "Hey Jude" for the last song.
Oh, cool! It's spreading. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this was private room karaoke then.
Uh huh. Yep.
Nice.
And no, he actually forced everyone in the bar.
I'm pretty sure, like, if the karaoke DJ was down for it, you could ask him and just say, like, hey, you know, for the closer before we pack up, let's just do Hey Jude. And he'd be like, oh yeah, that'd be pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then one of the other fun things they had is they had like a rating system after each song, so they would rate you on how well you did. The computers, like RoboCop and Alex Jensen. Much to my delight, I karaoke'd "Gay Bar" by Electric Six and got 100% on it. And
oh, nice!
I was happy about that.
That's like a karaoke revolution. I don't know if I'm entirely down with those incentives for you, because as much as I enjoy singing things correctly, karaoke is not all about being technically proficient and perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about improvised rap breaks in songs that don't otherwise have them.
Oh yeah. And even some that do. Yeah. But yeah, you got 100%. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, not much. So this wasn't covered in our before on air stuff, but I escaped the sickness, but several members of my family came down with it, by which I mean literally every other person in my family.
Oh, jeez.
Got the, like, 5-day stomach bug that went around, so.
Oh, God.
It sounds bad at first blush, but then you have complete autonomy over what you eat, because no one else can keep anything down, so. Yep. No fielder's choice out there.
Yeah, as long as you bring back some crackers and some ginger ale, you're good.
Yeah, no, it was, yeah, it was rough sailing for a bit, but they're through it now. And then, like I said, with everything getting warmer out, and with the house next to us is for sale, we're watching just kind of like a revolving door of potential neighbors come through.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out the etiquette for like, you know, how you go up and be friendly without being creepy. You know, like, hey, I have no idea if you're going to be in my life for an extended period of time, but I just wanted to introduce myself in case. Yeah. But then, you know, on that creepy fun, it's probably bad that we have a rating system for them that we kind of will sit on lawn chairs in the front yard.
Yeah.
Hold up. That couple was a 9. That seemed cool.
Yeah.
You have the
couple
signs?
Was a 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should hold it up like the Olympics.
Yeah. It's
they leave.
It's pretty aggressive that your rating system involves shooting Roman candles directly at them.
Look, the agility's just got to improve if you want to get up upset.
Hi, welcome to the neighborhood. Trash pickup is on Tuesday, and dance, dance, dance.
Look, cool. If you do that, then you know the people who do move in either are going to be your people and get you, or they were completely desperate.
Yeah, they're motivated buyers. Oh, man. Ben, it sounded like you were going to say something.
Nope. Oh. Just chuckling.
Okie doke. Yeah, well, I hope I hope that whoever moves in doesn't mind that they're moving in next to a podcaster. Did they have to fill out a disclosure on that? Is this place haunted? Has it been? Was it the site of a murder? And is it next to a podcaster?
It's really awkward as a podcaster when you move into a new neighborhood. You have to walk around and introduce yourself. It's like, hey, not here for what you think it is. Yeah. It's actually worse.
Yeah.
Don't just hide your kids. Hide your entire family.
Yeah. rate and review us on iTunes. And I'm going to ask you the same thing at every block party and neighborhood barbecue. And also, I'll just throw rocks through your windows. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's I always feel so. I've had several neighbors around me because I've always lived in multi-unit buildings. But like whenever I've had a downstairs neighbor or, you know, like that, I've always almost felt like I should get out ahead of it and say like, hey, I do audio stuff. So if you hear me talking and laughing at all hours of the night, that's why. But I don't want to prompt them to think that it's an optional thing, I guess. See,
I thought you were going to go a different direction with that.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying you want to get out ahead of it and be like, hey, you know, I actually do these podcasts. So you better stay fucking silent on every night of the week that I'm
recording. I'm incredibly concerned. That's one of the reasons that I rearranged my apartment was so that I could be as far as possible from my downstairs neighbor's bedroom while I'm recording. So I'm like, I'm talking directly into the front of the house right now. Well, I'm talking directly into a microphone, but that's what I'm facing is the front of the house.
Front of your house is a microphone?
Yeah. You have to be on some crazy list to make it happen.
Except with sound.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's been an eventful week. At least it has for me. I think that I'm projecting onto this somewhat. But yeah, we've got the usual kind of show for you. The brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And let's get started with
The brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Dennis, I am curious about the thing that you have sent. It is not strictly related to video games, but a game is involved.
Yeah, it's kind of the story of if you're going to be an asshole, you might as well be like a creative asshole.
you're going to have to narrow it down.
Yeah. So there's a new ransomware making the rounds that's actually called Rensomware. And the reason it's called that is instead of like locking up your computer and asking for a sum of money to unlock it, like ransomware does, it locks up your computer and then forces you to play a game. The Japanese title involves the term Rensen, and I'm not going to try to read the whole thing.
So it is Rensenware as opposed to ransomware.
Exactly.
Okay. R-E-N-S-E-N.
Yeah, so it's that Japanese name of the game that you play is Touhou Sirensen, or something in that vicinity.
Touhou is a shoot 'em up kind of game.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a bullet hell.
Yeah. Like a pattern based kind of like super hard kind of thing. I mostly know it because people get really into the lore, and it pops up wherever anybody's talking about games with lore.
Interesting. Okay.
But explain how this works. Tell me the sequence of events.
You get the malware, it pops it up, and you have to score 200 million points on this game. And again, bullet hell, shoot 'em up, in order to unlock it. And you have to do it on the game's most difficult setting, which is titled Lunatic Difficulty.
Okay.
I watched some video of it, and like, it has to have been a bot playing this game to stay alive and get as far as it did. But it's just ridiculous the amount of projectiles on screen at once. Like no one would be able to. In fact, even the creator, the creator put this out there, fell asleep, and then somehow woke up to find out he had accidentally infected his own computer.
I haven't read the article. It was shared right before we started recording. Is it, do you just have one try?
No, I don't think, well, I don't think it clarifies in the article.
Okay.
But from what I watched, the game is difficult enough that you know, it doesn't matter how many tries you would get.
Yeah.
Like I said, the guy infected himself and wasn't able to beat the game. But apparently was very apologetic about it and like sent out a fix for it, which is kind of chasing around afterwards. So maybe a dose of his own medicine helped him.
So it's the story, this did get into the wild, but not on purpose.
I'm not sure. So it says he uploaded it to GitHub.
Okay.
As you do.
Right.
And like I said, he got himself infected. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how much wider spread this is than that.
Right. Huh.
What's the name of this?
The game is Tohu Sirensen.
Yeah, Tohu Sirensen. Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. This is pretty crazy. Uploaded his joke to GitHub and fell asleep thinking nothing of it. When he woke up, he learned his virus had gone viral. So I think he was just trying this out. So it got released it got released and installed kind of by mistake. So it is the Jurassic Park clause. He was too worried about if he could, not if he should. Yeah. Like, ransomware is no joke. Like, there was it happens all the time. It doesn't just happen to people in the media. I think there was a This American Life or Radio Lab episode talking about something somebody had to go through. Like, you know, they needed to pay this money to to somebody in Bitcoin, and buying Bitcoin is kind of impossible, and he had to travel like four cities over to go to an ATM in the basement of a place.
Wait, when was this?
This was like 2 years ago, I think, that I heard the story. Okay. I don't know when, but
yeah. Did you hear the Radio Lab about the ransomware where it took over your computer and forced you to do a podcast episode on the ransomware before you could get rid of it?
Yeah, it was kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is this is crazy. I would much prefer that it was River City ransomware, but you know, and just because I like that game a lot.
But yeah, like there's someone out there, some hardcore bullet hell enthusiast that has intentionally gotten this.
Oh yeah, that is like locking their tax documents behind this high score wall. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, four I days, just love this because this is just what like 80s movies are made of. Like, I can just imagine this thing where like the instructions for the next, like, I don't know, like Al-Qaeda attack are in this locked computer. We need the best video gamer of all time in order to save America.
Oh yeah, you're just describing war games.
Calling Matthew Broderick.
Well, yeah, but that was like boring text-based stuff. This would have like at least two power gloves.
Huh. Yeah, this is entertaining. It is a funny joke. I would hate to be locked behind it though. Back your shit up, everybody.
Like, sure.
Just back your shit up.
Just use the cloud.
Not the cloud. No, have a local cloud. Have a local one and an online backup. Like both of them. Like have at least three different kinds of backups for fuck's sake.
And remember, always signal when you back up.
Oh, I mean, of course. Yeah. I've got a story. This is a small one. I know that I always do either announcements or releases, but I saw this and I was very excited about it because more people will be able to play the game. So Sega has ported Bayonetta over to Steam, making it so it can run in 4K and run at 60 frames per second, which sounds pretty nice. Cool, with all kinds of post-processing over top of it to make it look cool and smooth and nice. It's only available on Windows, but it's like for sale for like $20 or something like that. Like,
oh, that's pretty reasonable.
Do it.
Yeah.
Hey. Just download it and play it. That's good. Yeah, but what's amazing about this, so like I love this A, because Bayonetta is a good and fun game, but also like the more games that we can get out of the last generation of systems, be that Xbox 360 or the PlayStation 3, and into the PC where it feasibly can be played for a much longer time without being locked onto a box that's going to go into your closet, the better. And Sega has been very good about making this happen. So kudos.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the key part of this for me is that you said it, you know, it runs locked at 60 frames a second. And for a game like this, like, it's so important to have that, you know, the graphical quality not come at the expense of timing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure that the options that come out of the box are kind of inelegant, you know, as they tend to be. And probably the frame rate is going to be dependent on the system that you're running it on. But modders can get behind there and give people who really care about that particular smoothness, or who care about fine tuning the way that the game runs, everything that they need in order to make it happen, you know, in order to play it the way that they need to play it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, as much as this is re-releasing it, is equally turning it over.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And that is a good thing that happens when things land on PC. Who knows when Bayonetta 2 will come over, but I'm never ruling anything out. Again, Sega's doing good work with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That is really it for my story. Let's see. David, you have a story about Warframe.
Yeah, so I realize this is a little bit out of date, but for the April Fools, the Warframe subreddit partnered with the Destiny subreddit to get some of their old graphical resources and use that to completely remake the subreddit look identical to the old Destiny one.
Okay.
The player base responded by just filling the subreddit with posts suggesting that, you know, for example, posting pictures of Solid Snake and suggesting that that would be the new skin for the Ash, which is the stealth focused Warframe, or May for the Frost, you know, things like that. So I know it was both kind of cool that they took the effort to do this, cool that the player base supported it, mm-hmm. and also cool that the Destiny folks cooperated with it and, you know, made it happen. So
nice. Yeah. So just the joke is that Warframe kind of looks like the video game.
Right.
So yeah. they leaned into its kind of generic cyberness.
Yeah. And in particular, it has a lot of similarities to Destiny and vice versa.
Nice.
The amazing thing is that there was a joke on the internet and everyone was pretty much cool about it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm positive somebody out there recorded a 40-minute long rant into their webcam and uploaded it to YouTube.
Manifestos.
Bleh.
two other quick shout out short stories are the director of Overwatch has announced that they're going to try to make the play of the game feature better. Presumably the goal being to have it not always be Bastion. And the team behind The Witcher 3, who is making Cyberpunk 2077, has copyrighted the term, or trademarked rather, the term cyberpunk, which is quite possibly one of the most cyberpunk things they could have done.
Okay.
Yeah.
So play of the game, that feature is what happens when you finish a round of Overwatch and it says like, hey, this is a person who did something spectacularly cool. They're trying to, I take it they're trying to mess with the parameters on that. To vary things up.
Yeah, so apparently they've got a algorithm that determines it, and the problem is that while sometimes, I guess, kind of the two big problems with it are that sometimes it just totally fails and shows something completely boring, and then kind of my joke with Bastion is that particular character has a move that can very easily wipe the other team if the situation's right. So there can be sometimes situations where it'll tend to favor things that aren't actually that impressive, but you know, kind of throw up the right numbers.
Yeah.
Also, interestingly enough, apparently the developer has asked people to continue sending him videos of crappy play of the game so okay. that he can, you know, learn from them and improve, which just seems like asking to be trolled.
Maybe, but also, you know, he can probably get a good get a good sense for what is going to be, you know, Bastion wiping an entire team and what is going to be the entirety of B-movie.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Cyberpunk thing, like, it is literally that just them saying, we're going to make games with this in the title.
Yeah, and so it's going back and forth. Basically, they claim that it's purely defensive and that they're not going to be dicks about it, and also point out that they have trademarked it, not copyrighted it. Mm-hmm. Written it, which means that, you know, you could still use the term cyberpunk, just potentially not as a title. The problem being that, you know, there's already lots of things with cyberpunk in the title.
Right, right. Let me see here. So the article says that it is based on a tabletop game
yeah.
universe or whatever. That is, I mean, okay, that makes sense. On one hand, it feels like they're shooting themselves in the foot, because calling your game cyberpunk would just be search engine poison.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, yeah, it's a crappy name, but
that's why you got to assign a bunch of random numbers to the end of the name, like 2077 or something like that.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know. I've never heard of this game, but.
It was announced forever ago.
Yeah.
And I think it has, to a significant degree, just lived on in entirely based off of hype over how crappy its name is.
Well, also, I mean, it's being developed by the team that did The Witcher, which is one of the most highly regarded computer role playing games of the past decade. Mm-hmm. So they've got that going for them.
To be fair, like, if you just threw some neon on The Witcher, I think you could almost call it a day.
Yeah, The Witcher Blood Dragon.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know. Yeah, this article lists a whole bunch of games that have cyberpunk in the name, reminding me that I need to play Valhalla, a cyberpunk bartender, actually.
Yeah, that looks really good.
Yeah. I got it in a bundle, I think. Or maybe it was in a Humble Monthly. Huh. Ben, so you have a couple stories. I don't want to pin you down on one of them, but I'm curious. So
I only got one.
Tell me what you got.
The other one was linked just for you guys. The story I got is talking about the Uncharted side game, kind of like half game sort of thing that they're releasing in August. It was originally just supposed to be a DLC in addition to Uncharted 4, but then they expanded it and they made it into kind of a standalone game. It's going to be sold at $40, so it's like, I guess, somewhere in between what the DLC for The Last of Us was and what like a full-fledged game of theirs is. But it focuses on Chloe and Nadine. Chloe being introduced in Uncharted 2 and Nadine being the general from Uncharted 4. So it's supposed to take place after the events of Uncharted 4. So I guess spoiler alert on the fact that both of them lived through the series to that point.
As far as I could tell, nobody who is not a person with a European accent and an eye patch dies in those games. So
yeah, pretty fair.
Yeah.
So they released a trailer for it, and it shows them floating on a river in like a tugboat and having kind of the typical Uncharted scene where they have some pieces of evidence and they piece together to figure out where the treasure is and how they can get it. And then they get really excited and like maybe clink a glass of beer together and cheers one another as they ride into the sunset. But that looks cool enough that I'll probably get it. Especially given the strength of the DLC of The Last of Us, even though it was just a DLC, it was, you know, like it had a very high polish similar to their regular games, maybe. Yeah. So
just told a more modest story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're missing the most important part, although it's not, it's not in this particular story.
How can you accuse him of missing it if it's not in the story?
It's not important. If you pre-order this game, it will include Jack and Dexter, the Precursor Legacy.
Okay, yeah, there we are.
So, Dennis, I'm sure you've already pre-ordered this, so that's exciting.
No, he's already refreshing the PSN store every hour to see when the collection comes out.
Where is it?
They're both releasing on the same day, August 22nd. Okay. So, all right. 4 months out. But that seems pretty interesting. I mean, that's somewhat exciting, especially if you're a fan of the Uncharted series, since this will probably be the last entry in it, probably. But
I'm pretty excited to see some Uncharted content that is not pinned directly to Nathan Drake's character.
Yeah, that's also that'll be interesting as well, because
I mean,
he's dominated.
He's fine, but both of those characters are good.
No European accent, no eye patch. He's good.
Neat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Like they did. Naughty Dog started a second internal team, so that they could work on Uncharted and The Last of Us at the same time. So
we know
that that first team is working on The Last of Us too, but there is going to be something else, and they have been pretty explicit that it's not Uncharted. So I'm intrigued. They do good stuff. So
And some more details came out about The Last of Us Part Two, which also sounds kind of cool. There's they got an actress from Westworld to join up. Yeah,
man, I maintain though that is not a game that needs a sequel.
It ended pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah,
I really
need to actually play that.
Yeah, it's really really good. I hope they don't fuck it up.
Seconded. What was the game? It wasn't by Naughty Dog, but it looked like a Naughty Dog game. It involved a bunch of zombies. It was a guy on a motorcycle. They showed it off at the PlayStation
3. It was like a Quest for Blood, a Road Tale or something like that.
Yeah, pretty generic name, I think.
Yeah,
something about a road.
I literally do not know how to Google this.
Yeah. Zombie motorcycle game. Let's try it.
It's big thing was the amount of enemies that they could show on screen, which.
And the guy stupidly shooting them until the power of bodies allowed the zombies to get him.
Yeah,
I remember this. Yeah, he's on top of some water towers and stuff, and just like unloading on zombies running towards him.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty much.
Days Gone.
Yeah, there we go. Days Gone.
Yep. Literally, Google search for zombie motorcycle game.
What was that, Ben?
Is there a colon and subtitle to it?
No, it's just called Days Gone, which is kind of a fucking dick move because the first issue of Walking Dead is called Days Gone By. Days Gone BYE. Like, I don't know. They're just Revenge of the fucking Steezbiters, man.
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you are the ones who answer it. Kind of in a way that runs counter to the way that normal video game podcasts do it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I asked them about optional content in video games. So, you know, a lot of times the best stuff that a game has to offer is not on the critical path. So what are some side quests or otherwise optional content that absolutely should not be missed?
Yeah, and I will start us out with Chris, who says, the tree guy in Fallout 3. That was a fun little side quest that added a bit of lush beauty in an otherwise brown and naked world. Yeah, that was the, it's a quest called Oasis. I don't know if the quest is called Oasis. The area is called Oasis, and it's like, boom, you wander into this kind of box canyon that looks like it is straight out of Oblivion, as opposed to Fallout 3. It is a cool quest, and it stars a fan favorite Fallout character.
Looking back, it is amazing that Fallout 3 was allowed to get away with being as monotone as it was.
Allowed to get away with. So, are you talking about just the fact that everything else got shit for being brown in that time period, or are you talking about like, oh, that was not the style at the time?
I guess I just new generation PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 kind of had a lot of brown and lens flare games. But, you know, Fallout 3 being such a massive world, and I'm thinking back, and outside of this quest, I can't think of a single, like, interesting, colorful piece of scenery.
There's plenty of it in New Vegas. I know that doesn't answer your question. I think the biggest the biggest difference is density, as opposed to anything. I think Fallout 3 gets a pass specifically because of its theming, and also because it's a desolation simulator. I'm not saying that to be ridiculous. I'm just like, that is that that is the most apt way I can think to describe it. I don't know what you want from me, Dennis.
No, I just got it.
Okay, yeah. But yeah, that is a really good quest. I agree. David, what does Roop say?
Roop says, collecting all the fake QR codes in Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag really gave a deeper depth to the game and what's going on. Also, the codec of Otso Berg trying to swear in Finnish in AC Rogue is hilarious.
So I do not know if Roop is Finnish or not, and if that is why it is hilarious or not. But I will take it that somebody trying to swear in a different language is always going to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, Assassin's Creed 4, that is, so I hopped off of Assassin's Creed after Revelations, like after the Ezio trilogy wrapped up. So I never played 3, and Ben, I know you're going to say, don't play it.
It's fine. Yeah.
There's so many good things I could play that, like, jumping into an Assassin's Creed is the last thing I kind of want to do right now. But 4's whole conceit that you are a playtester at Ubisoft playing a new Assassin's Creed game is pretty great.
Yeah. I liked Brotherhood. Does that count?
Brotherhood's great.
I'm kind of envious, actually. My parents this summer are going to doing a trip to Italy and are staying in, like, one of the, like, random, like, huge Assassin's Creed style towers.
Oh yeah,
nice.
Yeah,
yeah. You should be envious. That sounds like a very fun vacation.
They rented out the Duomo.
Yep. It's an Airbnb now. Who knew?
I feel like I would be constantly just, like, looking for convenient bales of hay.
Of course.
Oh my god, guys, I just had the most amazing idea. Air D&D. You go to a place, you stay, get a nice place to stay while you're visiting the city, and also someone, like, runs a complimentary one-shot D&D game for you.
That would either be really cool or just the worst way to spend the night in a strange town.
We have to finish the campaign. You're staying up until 4 a.m.
I'm so tired. I've driven for 8 hours today.
Roll the dice.
Let me die. Let me die, please. Let me die. Let me die. Let me die.
You're gonna be fine.
Hey Ben, just real quick, can you let me die?
Sorry, gotta finish this campaign.
You can't do it until you roll it.
Here's a separate thing. So in days past, let me die, please. We are going so slow through these. Ben, can you read Franz's?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, Corbin. Corbin, I'm sorry. Corbin.
Corbin says, Fallout New Vegas, either King's Gambit or Beyond the Beef, for just the sheer amount of different ways those quests can resolve. The branching narrative feels organic and smart.
Yeah.
Is Beyond the Beef, was that the cannibalism one?
It sounds like it would be. Beyond the Beef, New Vegas. I just need to jog my memory because it's been a little over a year since I played that.
Is King's Gambit the one where you're talking to the Elvis impersonators?
Yeah. So King's Gambit is the one that you have to do in order to get into the Strip without paying for the passport. So you show up and you can
Freeside.
Yeah. So you're in Freeside. Is that an actual place, Ben?
No, Fremont is what it's ripping off, I think.
Fremont, okay. Yeah, but no, like there are a couple of different ways you can do it, just like resolving beef between the Kings and the NCR.
I think I just killed my way in.
It's New Vegas. You know, you do what you want. It's New Vegas, Jake. There's nothing you can do. Forget about it. Yeah. And Beyond the Beef is the one. Fuck me for forgetting this. That's the one that takes place. Yeah, it's the cannibalism one in the White Glove Society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is a like an A+. Like, everybody should learn from this quest. No. New Vegas is so fucking good, you guys. Dennis, what does Franz say?
Franz says the investigation missions in the secret world. None of them are required. All of them are amazing. Finding a phone that beeps a Morse code that leads to a fake company website that leads to real world research on classic painters that leads to an in-game item. I never expected to find the best, most satisfying puzzles in an MMO.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing.
That's great.
The thing that I heard is really frustrating, and by I heard, well, just assume that if I'm talking about a video games podcast, I'm talking about video games hot dog. so I heard this on that, which is that like these quests would be so much better if there wasn't just a general all world chat. Right. You find the beeping. See, you find the phone that beeps in Morse code, and then people ask the question, and either they are shouted down for being dumb, or just like you're being flooded with the solution, no matter what.
See, I personally never had any trouble with it. But man,
no, I believe you. I mean, you've had wonderful things to say about the Secret World.
Yep, I'm really, really pumped that they're remaking it. Apparently,
are they remaking it or is it going free to play?
It's going something.
Yeah, I just free to play was the last thing that I saw, which feels like I don't know about the right move, but a good move maybe for getting people to play it and see what is there before it goes away entirely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Sam,
do you think that the remake of the Secret World will be the Power World?
Oh yeah, and Gary wrote a book about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. let's see. Was that the joke you were trying to make?
The joke I was trying to make is the Secret, that book that was all big on, I think, Asking the Universe or whatever.
Oh yeah. Your vision board, the Power of Positive Thinking. Yeah.
Exactly. The next sequel or whatever, the next thing that author did was The Power.
Ugh, gross. It's so gross. When my mom had cancer, she's a breast cancer survivor, one of her closest friends like gave her The Secret. Like, hey, here's a book that got me through my cancer. It's like, you know, okay, on one hand, cool. Like, you know, outlook is definitely a very positive thing. She didn't say this. She was just kind of like, fuck that shit. And she didn't say that either. That's me. But it's kind of like, no, I'm not going to trust Oprah.
I'm good with the doctor.
Yeah, I'm good with with medicine. Medicine's pretty good. so let's see. Sam says the side quests in Deadly Premonition were universally pretty great. I did all of them without ever getting bored or needing to consult a guide more than a couple of times. If I have to pick one quest, one quest chain, it's the series of quests where Agent York teaches Emily to cook because it contains basically everything I love about that game's style. Honorable mention goes to the quest where you bring a flower to the sheriff so he can give it to his mother because it unlocks the fast travel and takes on a vastly different context 90% of the way through the game.
Huh.
Yep, that's a pretty good quest. It is one that you should do right away. I think you do it in Chapter 7. Or maybe you can do it in 2. I forget specifically which one. If I can pile on with Deadly Premonition, the quest chain that has you... talking with the James Hurley stand-in, the troubled boyfriend of the first murder victim in the town. All the quests that you do with him, finding the drugs in his motorcycle gas tank, that gets you a golden wrench, I believe, that is one of the best weapons in the game. It'll basically kill any zombie in one hit.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah. Look up, there are plenty of facts that tell you which quest to do, and just kind of go for it. Most of the quests in Deadly Premonition, the side quests rather, have you interacting with one of the crazy quirky townspeople that you meet. And yeah,
nice.
And even if the play isn't that good, then you know. Let's see.
It trades on personality.
It does. I mean, that's Deadly Premonition to a T. Mm-hmm. David, what does Allison say?
Sure. Allison says, I could go the easy route here and say the painted world of...
Ariamis
from Dark Souls, but instead I'll nominate the Chalice Dungeons from Bloodborne. Always consistently fun and interesting.
I think so. Allison, if this is your genuine opinion, I'm sorry. I think that Allison is literally trying to raise my blood pressure.
Okay, so I thought I was going to get shouted down for saying that I couldn't get into them.
No, it's I mean, if there is a standard network opinion, at least among the hosts, it's that the Chalice Dungeons are they're not aligned with my personal priority. Okay, so I fucked that up.
They're hot garbage.
Yeah. Okay. Let me say this in a politic fashion, because we've talked a lot of yay about it. Okay, Chalice Dungeons are not aligned with my priorities for what I approach Soulsborne games for. That said, I think that what they I don't like them very much. I think they're pretty bad. I don't like them.
Yeah, I can just say they're hot garbage.
And, yeah, you're not going to be yelled at. Like, you never get yelled at, Dennis. And I'm so
angry.
I know,
it's wonderful.
It. Yeah, you never get. I can always get yelled at.
Dude, mediocrity has its merits.
You're not fucking mediocre. Don't even try to sandbag.
I just remember hating the swinging axe things.
No, I mean
that. Yeah.
Like, I would have been fine if Bloodborne had a Sen's Fortress, you know, if it had like the crazy wacky castle full of traps. But
I think we've been a very specific, like, duck feed version of nerd sniped here.
Allison knows this well enough to know that is going to at least get me to say, that was so long ago that I cannot remember exactly where she falls down on this, because, you know, our opinions are not going to line
she
up.
She falls
all the
down
time.
At the swinging blades that knock you off the
yeah,
bridge.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Or where she falls on this, rather. Yeah, so I am simultaneously trying to be politic and not try to, like,
not have a heart attack.
Well, yeah, there we go. Yeah, so see, here's the thing: I'm trying not to make people angry, but people will be angry that I'm trying not to make people angry. So
the only solution is to just throw them a loop and piss people off as much as possible.
Man, I don't know.
And then you too can become the president.
I think by having a pulse and a microphone, I'm going to get yelled at. It's fine. Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says Legend of Mana had a huge amount of cool side content. Activities included raising pet monsters, crafting instruments that cast magic when you play them, and tending a backyard garden under the shade of a benevolent treant. The game's nonlinear flow meant that there might be whole areas you never see before beating the game. Luckily, its easy difficulty meant you never needed to interact with any of it. It was there if you wanted it.
Hmm. Cool. Yeah, Legend of Mana is the PlayStation Mana game, and I've only ever played Sword/Final Fantasy Adventure and Secret of Mana, so I do not know what he's talking about, but all that stuff sounds cool AF, as the kids say. I want to make a magic instrument.
Yeah. that was on my side.
Dennis, what does Tim say?
Yeah, Tim says, I'll say the written stories on the walls in Left 4 Dead, because I'm a Left 4 Dead boy. The side quests aren't even really quests, but optional stories you choose to engage or ignore. Pay attention to the scrawling gibberish in the safe rooms and the special zombies along the way to the end of each scenario. Sometimes you meet a unique survivor that thinks he's immune, even though he's not, or a zombie-ized version of someone who wrote a message. Very subtle storytelling, but helps paint the world so much more and feels like finding hidden treasure. I had no idea that that was in the game. Like, I know there
totally.
Were wall writings, but I never knew you could actually, like, meet some of those people.
Yeah.
That's
great.
Yeah. Oftentimes
briefly
they become,
before shooting them.
Yeah. Oftentimes they become special undead.
Huh.
Yeah. No, Valve does that. Like, every surface is a storytelling surface for Valve.
Before they, you know, stopped making games.
Well, yeah, before they stopped making games with stories, I think, is the QQ somebody writing in to tell me Dota has a story. I'm sorry. I it's not that I don't care. It's that I can't. I'm so sorry.
It's a story with 127 main characters.
Valve used to make games. Now they make money.
Is that a Ben Merkel original?
No, that's okay. Very much on Reddit or 3 years ago.
So. Okay, yeah. You know, whatever. That's where the incentives are, and nobody fucking runs that place, so. I've gone on a rant about Valve's Hellocracy, right?
You're going to have to narrow it down. This is the game industry.
No, it's just the fact that they ascribe to a completely flat org structure, so nobody is anybody else's boss, and everybody can do whatever they want, which just means that nobody actually does anything hard.
According to their work structure, they have a 2-level one. It's Gabe Newell is at 1 level, and everybody else is at the level below that.
Yeah.
Newellocracy.
I suppose. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is not good enough. Valve, I'm going to say this. It's not good enough.
You need more bureaucracy, Valve. Get it together.
How dare you question Newell?
You need somebody to tell people what to do. Please, I need Half-Life 3. I'll pick up here. David writes, pretty much any side quest in the Secret World. Continuing with that, even the standard MMO kill and collect quests usually have some flavor of text that helps build up the game world. The first act of the game is Innsmouth and may be the best Lovecraft game on the market. So much lore, and you have to go out and find most of it. Yeah. I don't know that I have anything more to add to that. So the first stage is Innsmouth. The second stage is Egypt. Is there something beyond that?
Yeah. Third stage is Romania, Transylvania. Mm-hmm. And the fourth stage is Tokyo.
Oh, cool.
It's reverse Bloodborne then, that the Transylvania stuff comes after the damn it,
Lovecraft. There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was trying to say Heartcraft, and I don't know. I knew that was wrong.
Also, you do a brief side excursion to Shangri-La.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
David, what does Dan say?
Dan says, Witcher 3, all of it. Dragon Age Inquisition, Drowned Village was very Dark Souls, and the Fantasy Masquerade Ball was fun. I love the fact that we can just consider The Witcher 3 in its entirety to be side quests. Yep.
Ben, as the person who's played Witcher 3, does that resonate?
Yeah, I think the solid thing about The Witcher 3 is like they have a high like minimum standard of the side quests, where it's like at worst it's like it's pretty good, but they don't have very many duds of side quests, so. Yeah, and like every like boss you fight is pretty unique at the end of the side quest, so that's pretty redeeming about it as well.
So, nice. Yeah, like a cool big monster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Into it. I was about to say something that would get me in trouble. So don't worry. I'll talk about it offline. But yeah, and then Dragon Age, the Drowned Village was definitely a highlight of the area specific side quests.
I'm trying to remember that. Is that the one where you're like lowering the water levels at a point?
It's like in the crazy spooky forest zone, and like there is a there is a reservoir that if you open the floodgates, it'll drain it, and then you ultimately find out, spoilers, that it was the cowardly mayor who flooded it to try and keep the undead away.
Gotcha.
And in the process, he, I believe, forgive me if I'm incorrect, killed a lot of innocent people and didn't stop the undead scourge at all.
Huh. It's usually how that plan goes.
No, I mean, yep, that old song and dance.
We've all been there.
Let's see. Ben, you didn't just read a question, did you?
I did not.
Okay, what does Nathan say?
Nor did I read a comment either.
Yeah.
Nathan says, Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver were, I think, the last Pokemon games to feature a game corner. I didn't enjoy the previous iterations, but HGSS featured a card game called Voltorb Flip that was similar to Minesweeper. Voltorb Flip gets me brain juices flowing in a way no other minigame ever has. I've probably played tens of hours of that stupid thing. Highly recommended for anybody that wants to waste a few hours of time that could otherwise be spent playing an actual game.
Was the game corner, was that the, like, casino things in the game, or
I believe so. Sure. I want to say yes, but I can't say for sure.
I have to say, I might go to like a casino if they had high stakes Minesweeper, as opposed to having to go to, you know, like
your computer,
the Middle East, if I want to pay high stakes Minesweeper.
Oh Jesus. That was fucking dark, David. I might go to a casino if I could win a Porygon by playing slots. I forget what I was going to say. Yeah.
It's all good.
It's all good. Dennis, let's see here. I want you to give me one final one. We're up on time for this. So Jonathan, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan, in Under the Wire, says, I'll add Dunwich and Fallout 3 and almost all the vaults across the series. The eeriness of those areas are dialed up to 11 for the Blackreach in Skyrim. It's deliberately disorienting and huge. It feels like a dark Morrowind and has a hidden boss. Fun place to visit.
I cannot remember the Blackreach in Skyrim. Of the people who have played Skyrim, do you remember the Blackreach?
Nope.
Yeah, I did not play it, so.
Yeah.
It does not sound like it is a nondescript cave, therefore it was not part of the Skyrim I played.
Sometimes they had caves with gears.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Oh, this is like a mushroom cave, it seems.
Oh, yeah.
Mushroom cave.
Hence the Morrowind comment, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Dunwich building is pretty good, especially because, like, in the main game, it is a cool little... I mean, you get an audio log of somebody slowly turning into a ghoul, which ends up being Lovecraftian, but then it connects to the Point Lookout DLC in a pretty cool way. That is also pretty Lovecraft too.
So, random question: in Fallout 4, the building with all the creepy mannequins with machetes, like, did anything ever come of that?
I don't know. I never played Fallout 4.
Ah,
yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Sorry, I can't help
you. I mean, nothing else free machete, but...
Yeah, I mean, hey, if you jump out of the plane, act like a machete because somebody catches you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for writing in. We should probably do ours because mine was probably stolen in one of those Fallout ones. Let me go ahead and say this, at least in terms of a neat Easter egg. In Silent Hill Downpour, one of the side quests will take you to an apartment that is actually Henry Townshend's apartment from Silent Hill 4.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you walk into it and you think, oh, this is pretty familiar. And then when you go to leave, you realize, oh, there are chains on the door. Yeah. And it's not in South Ashbrook or wherever it is. Like, that is not where it takes place. But it is literally just them saying, like, if nobody is going to recognize that Silent Hill 4 exists, then we fucking will. David, how about you?
Sure. Ironically, with my saw on Skyrim, I think one of my favorites was on the EverQuest. EverQuest had some good ones. But no, on the... I'm sorry, what is the main series? Elder Scrolls, thank you.
Yeah, there we are.
The Elder Scrolls MMO, there's one of the towns, if you wander off down a certain alley or whatever, you can find a portal to a pocket dimension, which has, I forget what they call their, like, Lovecraftian gods.
It's the Dagoth or whatever.
Yeah. So it's basically the domain of like a minor Dagoth that's got a like crow theme. So it's just this like mini Lovecraftian area full of talking crows that you have to convince to help you.
Oh, nice. If they're not called the Dagoth, and if that is actually a Lovecraft thing, please don't yell at me. In fact, please read that into everything I say. Please don't yell at me.
But you forfeit that right when you bought the microphone.
I should have had a pulse call.
Ah, damn it. Yeah. No, I think it is something like that. That is like Dagoth or something. But you go into Crow World. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Crows are great.
Yeah, I just remember there their threat to you if you don't do what they want is that they'll just follow you around for eternity crowing whenever you try to sleep.
Really?
That's pretty good.
Yeah. It's the Daedra. Sorry. The Daedra.
Daedra.
Yeah. Or the nine divines. Daedra are the minor ones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sorry. I just needed to make sure. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I couldn't come up with anything too interesting. Most of them are like the juggernaut games that a lot of people already mentioned. I think the ones that I'll throw out that I didn't see mentioned is the Arkham games. Usually their side quests are so good that they're pretty much considered part of the main quest. The Knights of the Old Republic and Knights of the Old Republic 2 have really good side quests. The ones that I could think of is there's one where it involves you asking and answering riddles with another NPC.
Oh, yeah.
To get out of a sticky situation. There's one side quest where you translate a language. So, like, as you figure out the language, you can communicate with the person that you're talking to, which was really cool. There's a base defense one. There's racing. There's card playing. Other example I could think of was GTA 3 and GTA Vice City and GTA San Andreas, where all the side quests would in some way, like, improve, like, your home base situation and would make the game more fun.
Yeah. So. You are the only person I know who has 100%ed San Andreas.
Yeah, it's not something I would probably brag about. That's not my opener.
it's not on page one of your resume.
Yeah.
I know. Maybe it should be.
I believe I completed that when we were at the dorms, maybe. I can't remember.
That might be why I remember it. I think you're playing it on like Xbox. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could never get past, like, once I learned that I could just super bunny hop the bikes, it was all over.
Why do anything else? Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
I saw a guy doing that, actually, in San Francisco. It was pretty impressive.
Super bunny hopping?
10 feet in the air.
Was it the YouTube star, Super Bunny Hop?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I'm saying at least 3 or 4 foot of air.
Oh, wow. Why is my instinct to say good for him or her? Who knows?
Go with that guy.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, the one that came to mind for me was the series was mentioned, but the Assassin's Creed side quests, they would have these like hidden glyphs that if you found them, they would have just like super obscure puzzles in them.
Yeah.
I think this is specifically the second game is where they started doing this. Yeah. But every time I found one, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to spend a half hour staring at the screen doing a puzzle game here, tucked away inside my action game. and completely, you know, optional. I think it unlocked pieces of a video that you could then stitch together if you did all of them. But
yeah, it showed like the first humans in the Garden of Eden finding one of the first, like artifacts, the apple,
inexplicably doing parkour.
Of course,
yeah, that's
fairly. I mean, you're actually right. Like you see these like caveman looking motherfuckers like hopping and jumping on trees and shit.
Yeah, you know, like you do. But so that was fun, and it really was excellent puzzles, and really good exercises in, like lateral thinking and all that stuff.
Yeah,
just tucked away. So the funniest thing would be, you know, if you're just in the middle of like some kind of action sequence, and all of a sudden you spot it, you're like, well, I'll just zip into this, and you know, you know, pocket dimension. Whenever I'm done, I will completely forget that I had 100 guards chasing me.
Oh yeah.
To be fair, that is kind of the game's conceit.
Yeah.
Well, that stuff was really cool because like those glyphs were actually left and encoded by the previous person who used the animus and had their consciousness get lost in it.
Yep. Yeah.
And like Revelation, like the hub world for that was like you were just in the sunken place that this person kind of created for you, where his consciousness fled to.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Is that the same guy that goes all like blood painty on you later on?
Huh?
Like one of the previous like test subjects just at some point just start like leaves you a whole bunch of messages in the real world written in his blood. It's creepy as hell.
Maybe I can't recall that specific detail.
Back before they realized that the real world was boring and the game should just focus on stabbing people.
Man, Brotherhood running through modern day wandering through your modern day villa was pretty cool.
Yeah,
I don't know. I liked it. But then again, I liked building up my villa in Two Wind.
I did like that, actually.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in. Thank you, Dennis, for putting that up. If you want to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for those to go up on Tuesday afternoons or evenings. We would love to hear from you.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the things that we are playing or have been playing over the past week or period of time or so. I'm gonna get myself out of the way. I was in Milwaukee traveling for a show, so I didn't play shit. Yeah. I apologize for being remiss in that. I didn't bring my Switch while Gary did, and so I was very resentful. both of the games we're playing for assignment are portable, and I brought both of those, but as I was either too exhausted or too drunk to do anything on the nights when we were in the hotel. So
that you remember, one of those games might be like 100%ed right now and you just haven't checked it.
Oh shit, I forgot to take notes on this for WAF. Fuck. No. but that is that's my
an amazing amount of self-control to not bring the Switch. Like I don't understand how you were able to bring yourself to that.
I just knew that if I brought the Switch, I would not play the things that I needed to play. Even if I did play the things, even if I did have time to play the things that I played. Yeah, so I just left it. It was like a period of like 4 or 5 days. Like it's fine. But yeah, that is here and all of it's waiting for me, and all of the wide world of possibilities and experience is waiting for me in my homebody routine. But yeah, that is my short way of playing. I ain't said shit. But David, since it's been the longest since you've been here, I'm going to throw to you first.
Yeah, I feel kind of bad because I've basically just binged lots and lots of Warframe, which okay. I'm not sure is particularly interesting.
So have you done anything different, or have you unlocked a different level of play compared to the previous times when you have talked about the character action MMO that is Warframe?
Tell sure. us about your Warframe inventory. What frames
I
you work
really
with
rather you didn't. I'd like to keep it a little bit higher level than that. But like, in the time that you've been kind of going hog with it, have you started doing different kind of stuff, or is it just the same kind of satisfying loop over and over again?
Sure. I've pretty much gotten to kind of the pseudo end game, which basically after you beat the second big story quest, which continues to be pretty epic. You unlock the ability to do kind of daily raids. And those so far are fun, although they're incredibly difficult. They're basically you do 3 missions, each one having higher level enemies, and the final one has enemies at a little less than twice the power of the strongest enemies you get in the course of like playing through the story. Other than that, I'm just trying some different frames, messing around with some of the stealth mechanic gameplay, which is very cool because it has kind of a Red Dead Redemption style ability where you can basically highlight multiple enemies and then do like the super fast like ninja disappear and like stab people in the back and just wipe out a whole group of enemies.
It's like the PlayStation 2 Shinobi game.
Yeah, exactly. Similarly been messing around with their Berserker frame that just kind of can randomly become invincible. So
wait, randomly, like you're not in control of when it turns
well,
invisible.
You're in control, but I don't know, like for me
you're not out of control, you're not
horrible at playing the game.
Okay.
Other than that, I'm really pumped. I got a badass lever action rifle, which I feel like is something that is incredibly underused in shooters
outside of like Call of Duty 2, World War 2 kind of stuff, right?
Right, exactly.
Those have been out of vogue for so long, though, that it's kind of... Yeah, what was the last shooter set in World War 2?
World War II. I don't know about the last because there was probably some like weird shitty Day of Defeat clone that was set there.
Yeah, but like, the last like AAA.
No, I mean what you're thinking of is Battlefield 1. Like the recent World War One stuff, I'm sure something was lever action there, but who knows? they played real fast and loose, and it kind of doesn't matter. But yeah, so you unlocked a lever action rifle in this. Like, is it appreciably different than the normal stuff?
I mean, yes and no. Part of it is that it basically timing is really important with it, because you can't fire until after, you know, the lever action animation. So it's a lot. You have to actually have, like, I guess you could say some rhythm to your firing as opposed to just button mashing as fast as possible. Right. And then in effect, it ends up, it's actually burst fire, because why not make things more just ridiculous?
Right.
And so it ends up being kind of similar gameplay to a, like a shotgun style gameplay where it emphasizes kind of rhythm and, you know, kind of being able to switch targets rapidly.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, it just continues to be fun. It's kind of interesting, you know, with the comparisons to Destiny, kind of looking at the similarities and differences. It's, you know, very much, whereas Destiny is much more oriented on kind of, you know, your character as the paladin that's kind of making the stand against evil. Mm-hmm. This is much more kind of present you as just kind of like martial skill incarnate.
Okay.
So it's in that respect, I think that's kind of some of where some of the things I've said with, you know, your character's kind of coming across as a little sociopathic comes in.
I mean, they're basically robots with creamy fleshy cores at this point, right?
That would be spoiling things, but potentially.
Oh,
are they more like Robocop or more like Alex Jensen?
Did either of them ask for this?
Actually, neither of them asked for this, the game takes a weird hard left turn into Lovecraft. It's one of those weird games. It's funny because the game is very much, you know, AAA quality stuff like that, but in a lot of ways its storyline sort of reminds me of some of like the League of Legends type thing, where it has actually a very deep, very compelling storyline, but at the same time, like a lot of the core gameplay is just killing things.
Okay.
So yeah, it is pretty funny because, like, in an average mission, it would not be unusual for you to have like a kill count of say like 500 people.
Jesus. Those are NPCs, like the, like those are just mobs. Those are not.
Yeah, NPCs. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many different frames can you choose from? Because you mentioned the Berserker and the Stealth one.
There's like 20 something.
Okay.
It
kind of sounds like D&D classes. Or at least Berserker is almost identical to a D&D class.
Like a barbarian.
Yeah. It's you know, they're all very much, you know, their own gameplay. And I tend to, you know, I kind of joke my favorite class in most games is, you know, Gunhaver, with the special ability of has gun. So I tend to play some of the fairly generic ones, but there's also, you know, there's one that specializes in like multiple dimension, like Bioshock Infinite type stuff, where you can basically switch allies and enemies in and out of a pocket dimension, where if they're both in the same one, they can't attack each other. If they're not, they can't. You know, it's basically just this really weird form of crowd control. There's a music oriented frame that gives buffs to your opponents if they fire in rhythm with the music you play.
Oh yeah, I talked about that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
There's just a ton of things. A bunch of biological warfare frames that are just really, really creepy. Tentacle frame.
Tentacle frame. Yeah.
Those two things don't seem to go together, right? Tentacles don't seem too sturdy, but
yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, you know. This just sounds like a really weird game.
Yeah, it is in a lot of ways very intensely bizarre. I mean, part of it is like, and one of the things I like about it is they lean really heavily on kind of the alien nature of like the designs and
The
different characters, things like that. I enjoy it. I still enjoy its weird style. There was a brief special event where basically you're trying to help rescue a group of defectors from one of the enemy factions, and you're starting voiceover is very much. Now this time, be very careful. Do not kill everyone. It's like, yeah, we're totally the baddies.
Huh. Anything else about Warframe?
No, it's a lot of fun. Random ninja slides need to be added to more games.
They did.
Play Horizon Zero Dawn.
Horizon Zero Dawn. Okay.
They have ninja slides for days,
right?
Well, say again, David.
What's that?
That and Vanquish, right?
Yeah. Vanquish has 100% power slides. Jack Black power slides.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Play anything else, David?
No. I actually think that's it.
You've been on the move too.
Freaking Vermintide released a 11 gigabyte patch, which made it now too big for my hard drive.
What the fuck? 11 gigabytes? I've seen screenshots of that. That does not seem like a game that should be that big.
You can now 3D print entire maps. This wasn't the actual game. The game itself is what, like 20 or 30 gig? but no, this was just they basically added unlockable lore entries.
Ugh.
I don't know how they got 11 gigabytes of lore, but Grant, it is Warhammer, so
yeah, I mean that's how they did it. You answered your own question there. Ben, I'm curious what you've been playing.
I got a whole bunch of old stuff, but kind of new developments in it. So I streamed playing a Portal map again that my coworker made. This time I did a sober run through, and I was able to solve all the puzzles pretty quickly.
Sober run through.
Might be a correlation there. But it was a lot of fun.
Is there a causation?
I'll have to do more experimentation to find out. But I was definitely really impressed with the level of design on the map. The name of the map is called The Long Way Back, if anyone's curious to play it. And I recorded it for the first time, I streamed last week and I streamed this week, but I actually recorded the stream this time. So I have a video of it. I haven't posted it on YouTube or anything, so I might do that. But it's just, that's the first like kind of recorded game session I've ever done. So that was fun. Yeah. So that was cool. I also over the weekend played Portal 2 in its entirety, like kind of alongside that game. But man, that's just a really good game. It still holds up. I mean, the jokes are still funny, even though I kind of remember most of the punchlines.
Oh, of course.
I remember most of the puzzles save one, but they were still good.
What was the one that escaped you?
There's one where it's kind of like a thing where they're trying to trick you, I guess. And so it tricked me again, I guess. I'm trying to be specifically vague, I guess. But so I was impressed by that. The one part where they tried to surprise you was actually not memorable and managed to surprise you later.
Yeah.
We're playing the long game.
the 7-year long game.
Voice acting so quality in that
game. Oh, God, it's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nah, that's what is that? Stephen Merchant plays Wheatley in that?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. No, it's great. Like we did it last year, and I just wanted it to go on and on forever. Did anything new stick out to you about it when you played it? I mean, I assume so. You've played it more recently than I did. Like you've been running people through it and just being like vexingly silent while they do it. But like what was the key takeaway from it aside from just, hey, this is good. Like I remember it being good.
It's just so well polished. Like all the puzzles are just like, are just, they're very elegant, where it's like they have one and only one solution, and you can't break them, and like all the components are set up. Like, I don't know. It's just like they give you exactly what you need, but no more. And it's, I don't know. It's just really elegant game design. So I imagine they probably play tested so much of that to get that level of polish to it.
It's about
yeah.
Yeah. I really need to beat that game.
Yeah, it's super good. Like the middle act is kind of a downer, but like the last act is fucking amazing.
Can't tell if that's a pun or not, but
not intentionally. But I'll take it if I'm gonna do the time, I might as well do the crime.
That's like that's another great part about the story, though, is like that physical kind of metaphor, mm-hmm. you know, like reinforcing the theme. Yeah.
I just got tired of the point where, like, every time I wanted to walk through a door, I had to solve a puzzle.
I'm sorry, David. That's the game.
You gotta take it or leave it.
No, but yeah. I'm talking about the freaking puzzles in between the puzzles.
Oh yeah, I mean that specifically is one of the things that makes the middle section a bummer, is where you have to find you have to find your way between the two between every test chamber. Yeah,
and like set piece, and
I mean, I think they were probably trying to break the mold of only having tests. And I mean, I guess with the first game, it was in two halves, right? There was do the test in the test rooms, and then you do the test in the real world or whatever.
Yeah,
and I guess they were trying to kind of have more variability instead of just doing test chambers. But
I understand the impulse to not want to do the same thing twice, but that is understandable. I just it is hard to shake off that frustration.
Yeah. I really do like the liquids they add in the game too, where it's like, because that seems like such a gamble to add like a new mechanic to try and compete with like the portal device, but it's just well done.
Yeah. Was it speed and bouncy?
There's speed, bouncy, and make portals.
Yeah, like the moon dust goo that that makes a portal surface.
That ruined Cave Johnson.
Yeah.
Yo, ironically enough, I've actually been involved with scientific experiments with moon dust. It will in fact jack you up.
Yeah. can you actually talk about who you were employed with at the time?
I did a internship at NASA, and that was one of the things. one of the highlights though was reading the transcripts of basically they're like debriefs with each of the moon missions of how to deal with this moon dust problem, and eventually the solution they just decided on is they would simply like lift off from the moon, and then once they're in space, just open the door and let the vacuum of space just suck out all the moon dust out.
Well,
problem solved.
It stinks, doesn't it? Like it's like noxious. Right.
Well, and the big thing is it's approximate, like what they use to approximate it is volcanic ash.
Oh, geez.
So it's basically like silica. So it's just will degrade and wear everything. And since the moon doesn't have an atmosphere, the cosmic rays cause everything to be electrically charged. Oh, so God. It just sticks to everything.
Oh, God. That sounds awful.
I'm sorry, that was an incredibly random aside. I'm really sorry for that.
Well, no, it's also incredibly interesting. I've never thought very hard about the physical properties of moon dust.
Yeah, it turns out, like, other than radiation, cosmic radiation, that would probably be the number two thing you'd have to deal with in terms of like building a moon colony or whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, you go to the Myrtle Beach and the sand gets everywhere. Just think about the inside of those moon domes.
All right, so going further down this tangent, apparently there was like a moon scare around like the 60s or 70s when they were planning on landing, where they thought that there'd be too much dust when they landed.
That
would cause problems. And one of my other coworkers, his dad worked for NASA, and he said he apparently was not able to see the birth of his first child because he had to quell fears that that was not an issue. And like, nah, you're good.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to suck, but it'll be fine. Like, well, I'm sure somebody thought some Andromeda strange shit was going to go down and they're going to bring back some weird fossils that would turn out to be, you know, things or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a great, great book.
I've never read it. I've only read one Michael Crichton thing, and that was Timeline.
Huh.
And that was in middle school before I knew better. Yeah.
All right. So other games I got going back on the rails. Rocket League Horizon Zero Dawn.
What? You need to separate those by just a little bit if you can.
Just colons everywhere.
Okay.
Rocket League's Rocket League. I won't talk about that. Horizon Zero Dawn. I'm still like, I'm feeling less and less inclined to beat that game. Like it's pretty, feels pretty bland. Like I hate the map design where it's really easy for you to just walk off a ledge, yeah. And the climbing it feels very fake. Like when you jump, say you jump forward towards like a bar, your character will just laterally move to the left or right because for some reason they want you to land on these certain parts of like bars that you climb.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Man, I don't share any of those frustrations.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm stuck right now at a boss fight and I'm like at the same level as the boss. But it seems like, so again, it's not good to compare any game to Portal 2. That's not really fair. But since I played those two recently, like thinking of like the end boss fight in Portal 2, where it's very constructive, where they keep giving you new elements and you have to keep like figuring things out, and thinking of the boss fight that I have right now, where there's a lot of elements in the map or whatever, but the boss specifically destroys all of those elements so that mm-hmm. you can't use them. And like, it just evolves into you shooting as many arrows at him as you can. And like hoping you can keep constructing arrows and keep getting enough life so that you don't die. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been able to get past that part, but it's just like, I don't know. It like, I don't mind the fact of it being challenging, but the fact that like, it's not like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem fun. And it doesn't seem like there doesn't seem to be any problem solving in trying to like take down the thing. Like I know you can watch them from afar to try and figure out like what their weaknesses are. There's like two weaknesses I can exploit. It's like fire or electricity, and I can make fire arrows. I can't really set down electric traps too well because there's not like a break in the action that you can do that. And even if I can, you can only set down like two or three before it stuns them, and you can't get I haven't been able to get like a secret shot on them or whatever.
Is it a spoiler to say what kind of enemy you're fighting?
It's one, I think. So we were at the same mission, I think, a week ago, where it's like in the top left corner of the map.
Well, I mean, these names won't mean anything to someone who hasn't played the game. So is it a Deathbringer or a Thunderjaw?
Yeah, exactly. Deathbringer. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
So,
the real question, could you beat it if you had a portal gun?
It would be more fun if I had a portal gun, but I think I could use that for almost any game.
Yeah, you could just go play Portal if that was your criteria.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying, Portal might have been better with robot raptors.
And so going back to the Deathbringer, like the first Deathbringer that I beat... I'm mid-vent here. I don't want to lose steam.
Vents are exactly how you lose steam. Sorry.
And that's how you kill like the bad guys too, is they have vents and they heat up or whatever. But the first Deathbringer, the only reason I beat him is there's one part of the map that you can stand behind and it's apparently indestructible. So like his bullets will hit that and not you, and you just keep shooting with arrows until he dies, which is like very boring, but that's how I did it.
Yeah.
Perhaps there's a way, like there's maybe I just did not understand how like you should be attacking these things or like how to be bringing them down. But you only have two interactions with them. They only have a cutscene with both of them. They emphasize like the steam things, which you can shoot and which I try and shoot, but beyond it, like periodically taking a break from you shooting them, I don't see like any real strategy to taking them down. But Dennis,
I was gonna say, did you shoot the legs at all?
I started to do that on my last run, but I didn't see that have too much of an effect. Can you shoot the legs off?
Yeah, you got to shoot the legs while they're transitioning between forms.
Okay.
And that'll kind of knock them over and stun them for a bit. The other thing sweep I had success legs, with. What's that?
Sweep the legs.
Yeah, sweep. Yeah, exactly. The other thing I had success with was focusing on the weapons that were kind of harrying me the most. So the big top-mounted cannon and little machine guns in front. The top-mounted one took forever to knock off, but I could get the little machine gun things a little bit easier, and that bought me time. But for most, I mean, what I liked about that fight in particular, when you face your first like mobile Deathbringer, was that it very much felt like you were outclassed, and that you had to keep moving. So the one advantage you had on it was speed. And that you could run a little bit faster around it than it could turn. It was just constantly kind of finding ways to leverage that one advantage. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it was very much a bullet sponge, in that it had a huge health bar, and you just had to fire and fire and fire. I mean, you could brute force it, but if you got creative and found ways like attacking the legs, like some other things, you know, the game kind of is really firmly guiding you towards finding and using those exploits.
That's the thing, is I disagree with that. Is I feel like they don't give any instruction on like how to attack these things. And
did you go into the notebook and read up on it?
No.
Ah, see, have you gone into the notebook and read up on any of the bots?
No.
There's literally like the first time you scan every enemy, you get an entry that will detail both the thing as a whole, but then it's a list of every single component part and its vulnerabilities. And so that's actually how I found to focus on the legs, was it had those highlighted.
Okay. I've been habitually skipping those because like the audio logs that I have listened to have been like kind of useless information and like not really great world building information either. So it's I've been kind of skipping through all of that side information. So
read the monster manual, man. That's okay. Important stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that is applicable in any given situation. Always read the monster manual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they do have a heads up display where like when you scan like a person, it'll like show iconography of like what the weaknesses are like over when you scan it. And like, that's nice at least. So like if something has like a gas canister, if you shoot it on fire, it'll explode, like that sort of thing. So, I mean, I like that aspect of it, but okay. Well, that might be more helpful. So maybe I'll give it another college try and see if I can beat that. But
yeah, it sucks that you're not enjoying the game nearly as much as I am. Cause, yeah, I mean, I've still got a very high opinion of it.
Gotcha.
Ben, do you still have the arrangement where you buying and playing this gets you access to Breath of the Wild?
I don't know. I've been too skittish to like follow up on it. Okay. I'm worried because the buzz of this game's dying down, but people are still into Breath of the Wild.
Oh no.
I feel like my leverage is
you need to hurry.
Yeah, I know.
Finish it. Say that it's a must play, and say that you will that you cannot and will not say anything about it. Because
I hope you guys listen to this podcast. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, all right. So moving on, I do have one more game to talk about really briefly. Steven Sausage Roll. I've solved 3 to 4 puzzles over the last week, which is like a huge deal for me. Because they're really difficult puzzles, and I did not think I'd be able to solve any of the puzzles, so I've been pretty happy with that.
Is this still World 2?
This is World 3. And I've been stuck on World 3 for a while, so I beat the first two worlds pretty early on, maybe a couple of weeks to a month ago. But, World 3 is a lot trickier. I hadn't made a lot of progress, but I was actually able to play it this weekend and knock some of them out. There's still like 2 or 3 puzzles left. And again, like every time you start a puzzle in this game, you're like, I'm pretty sure this is impossible. Like, I don't think there's a way to do this. And so it is fun trying to figure that sort of thing out. It's definitely a tough game. I don't even know. I don't know if I'll be able to make it to World 4, much less beat World 4. I still don't know, even after playing like World 3. So World 3 will teach a specific mechanic to you. Which is good, but the first the puzzle that gets you to World 3 is that mechanic, and it seems highly out of order. Where it's like, I don't, because that was the puzzle that I looked up the solution to how to do it. even if I had to do that puzzle again, I don't know if I'd be able to come up with a solution for how to do it. It's a very complicated version of the puzzle. So I do kind of question that design a little bit, because I don't know how it's reasonable to expect somebody to get that puzzle without having never seen that mechanic. So
yeah. And it's not like a Mario 1-1 thing where, like, hey, here's how you jump. It is like incorporating it into the hardest puzzle of the previous world.
Yeah. So I don't know, but yeah, I still really like the game. It's definitely fun. I'm the same person who made the Portal puzzle that I solved. Like, he typically streams puzzle games, so I'm trying to get him to stream solving this, because I really want to watch another person go through this puzzle like kind of get through the process. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Is that because you want somebody else to feel the same frustration that you have felt, or do you feel like you will learn something about the design of the game by watching a fresh person from an outside perspective?
It's not Schadenfreude. Like, I don't want to see someone be frustrated, but I think it's a game that definitely pays off with, like, persistent problem solving. And so if you can find, like, the right kind of person to play that game, I think it's really satisfying to watch somebody solve a puzzle like that. So that's kind of why I want to watch it, I guess, if that makes sense. Yeah. But
that makes sense.
Yeah. But yeah, so I really like that game. Again, I'll try and solve those puzzles, but I don't have. It's really hard. So
is World 4 the last one? Like, you're pretty far on.
I think so. Yeah. I think I've only looked this up a couple of times, like on, like, GameFAQs or whatever, to look at, like, the chapters or whatever, to see, like, kind of gauge how far you are in it. I think there's only 4 worlds. So yeah.
Huh. Well, congratulations. I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks, man.
I literally only know of one other person who has beaten it, and that is Kevin from Video Games Odd Dog. Like,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a doozy.
Yeah.
Dennis, this is like the Dark Souls of puzzle games. If that is to seduce you into playing it.
It's punishing, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've never looked at something and so thoroughly realized this could be entirely masterful. I will believe the people who I trust who say that it is masterful, but it is so not for me.
Yeah. The graphics are very low key, I guess. Like, they threw you off the scent of the game for sure, I guess.
Oh, I mean, not even that. Like, the graphics don't matter too much to me, and I get the sense that they really don't matter an awful lot to the overall game itself, other than, like, the fact that they are 3D builds in the rotation of your dude, which is incredibly important. Like, it doesn't matter, like, what it looks like, but just watching videos of it and seeing what you're expected to do, I just know that, like, given enough time, I would probably feel okay about the project, about the progress I'd make in, like, World 1, but I just know that would be me throwing good time after bad, and I'm fine with puzzle games, but, like, not on that order of magnitude. I know myself better than that.
I the more I talk about it, the more I do think it's very much like Dark Souls, because, like, it every puzzle seems very impossible when you first start it, and then it's like, yeah, and you just have to, like, methodically attack it and say, like, okay, well, I have to do this, this, and this if I need to solve the puzzle. So that might give me a hint to do this. And then usually something can kind of break from that. But
are you, like, riding the rewind button in order to do this? Or is it more of just a, like a straight rote planning process?
Yeah. So, I mean, no, that's definitely a nice feature of it, is you can undo any of your steps, and, like, it's similar to Braid in that you can kind of rewind all the way out of the puzzle. I think you can even rewind beyond that. I haven't really tested how far you can go back. I'm pretty sure you can't go back beyond the last solved puzzle that you've had, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But no, typically what it is you know, I'll try and figure out, like, a first piece where it's like, okay, so to solve this, I might need to get this piece of sausage here. So let me try and do that first. And then when I do that, I'll try something out, and then I might get stuck. And then I might, like, go back a few steps and then try something different there.
Yeah.
It's kind of like artificial checkpointing, I guess, where you're like, okay, I made it to here and I know I need to get to here.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to try and explore from within here, but I can rewind to this point if I need to.
Yeah. So, like, you're basically rewinding to your last known, like, I'm sure this was a good move.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like you're having fun with it. Like, it, you know.
Yeah.
not having the like this is bullshit kind of reaction that I might have with it.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a game for everybody.
Yeah.
It's definitely you need to be a very patient problem solver, and you have to like puzzle games, and it might be rewarding if those things fall into place.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
Dennis, round us out.
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing more Horizon Zero Dawn, trying to focus on Critical Path stuff a little bit more. It is still, really, really good. The one thing that is a little disappointing for me is it seems like some of the cinematography of the cutscenes was not that well considered. Just like there's one scene where Aloy is like in a cage, and every shot that's supposed to be of her like reacting to something is like her face is obscured behind bars. And it's like, I don't know if it's like there's something dynamic about the way the scene is being generated that it just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, or if like quality control just somehow missed that, hey, the camera's in like the absolute wrong place for this. Because it feels like if anyone making this scene was actually watching what they were making, they'd go, oh, her face is completely obscured. Like, why? We should move the camera a little bit.
Shimmy that over a couple of degrees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like that's literally all it would take. But yeah, so that feels a little bit weird. There's also some stuff as I get into more like lore and exposition. You definitely do a lot of just standing and listening. So you'll like scan an object that'll bring up like an audio file. And it's interesting stuff, but it just feels a little weird to be like, just stand there with your character and listen to it happen. Mm. And then, you walk 5 feet down the hall, scan something else and listen to that. And so it's, I suppose it's accurate to what this character would be doing if this was the way they were interacting with stuff in the game world, but just, it feels a little bit weird. But yeah, so the exposition stuff aside, I'm still absolutely loving the game. It's fun to play. The fights against the larger enemies, like Thunderjaws, like Deathbringers, have been really satisfying for me. And I don't know what it is. I've maybe leaned into the puzzle element of them a little bit more. And I've actually, and this isn't a slam on you, Ben, but knowing that resource was there to like read up on, okay, here are some ideas for how I might deal with this, I think is a huge enabler. Mm-hmm. and changed the way that I fought them. And I've gotten to the point where like the last Thunderjaw, the first time I encountered a Thunderjaw, I felt completely overwhelmed. I felt outclassed and like I barely survived the fight. The last time playing so far that I took on a Thunderjaw, I felt like, okay, I've got my footing. I knew how to approach it. I knew what to shoot first. And like it played out really satisfying way, especially in contrast to the first one that I'd fought. So it's cool to feel like, I hadn't necessarily unlocked a ton of skills or, hadn't gotten a huge stats boost since I fought it last. It was just, I knew better, which is always what you want out of a game versus just dialing up the health bar numbers. So
it sounds like you're a good way through the game. I mean, you've been talking about it for a while, and you're on the main path. How much range is there in the complexity of these big animal fights? Like, if you have fought one gigantic dinosaur type enemy, have you fought them all and you're just kind of repeating the same steps, or is it more variable than it kind of sounds? Because right now it just kind of seems like, hey, I can scan this and know that this particular thing, I'm going to lay down this trap and fire this arrow and take this approach to it. Like how much scenario difference is there between different encounters?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the main differences come almost in like the classes of enemies. So flying enemies fight very, very different than like large land enemies than small land
flammable enemies.
if someone's flammable, then you're fighting them differently as well. So I think there's a couple of enemy types that are very unique. Like I would say the corruptors are very unique, and that's diegetic because they kind of serve a different purpose within the world than everything else does. So that feels right. That fight is a lot more aggressive than the other ones. And then the small animals you can kind of be more aggressive yourself with. Larger animals, it's all about finding and exploiting the weak points. And then the flying animals, it's all about being able to find ways to tie them down.
Yeah.
And while at the same time, usually you're fighting a flock of them. And so it's focusing one, getting it tied down and destroying it before it can take off again without getting overwhelmed by the other ones.
Yeah.
So there are minor differences, between each type, but generally, if you've fought a Ravager, you've fought a Scrapper, you fought kind of a Behemoth.
Yeah.
But how do you fight the alligator ones?
Usually with a lot of fire traps.
You swing over them on a rope.
Yes.
Or you go under in the scorpion cave.
Yes, indeed. The alligator ones are tough because they're frequently around water. And so you have to plan. I think the setup is a little bit more important there because, they are going, if you encounter one while you are in the water, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You just have no verbs to fight them there. So you've got to make sure that as you're, when you draw them into a conflict, you're doing it on ground that is favorable to you.
Which is ground.
Which is, yeah.
Yes. You need to make sure that you're encountering them on ground.
But I wouldn't say that they're called snap maws. I wouldn't say that they are like that. You're not doing anything fundamentally different than fighting some of the other kind of medium sized enemy types.
Mm-hmm.
There are different twists on it. So there's kind of archetypes and there's small differences within the archetypes, but I wouldn't say any of it has felt stale just because, you're dealing with different, landscapes, different quantities, different commonness. So you might have like a small one and a medium one or a small one and a big one, and fighting them in those different combinations is interesting as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not a ton to say about it. I think I'm to the point on that game where I think the next time I should spend a ton of time talking about it is when I've finished it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very, very much enjoying it. And photo mode continues to just be, I don't even adjust the camera much anymore. It's just, there's so many beautiful vistas in this game, that you could hit pause at any point and just take a great picture. So I'm trying to be good about posting this to Twitter.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I do want to lobby one complaint that there's one point in the game where you climb this like really huge tower and you're expecting like a really sweet vista and it's cloudy. And there's so much clouds in every direction.
Yeah. So fire watch all over again.
It's like, darn.
Yeah. Unfortunate. So that's Horizon Zero Dawn. I feel like it's worth me talking about Hearthstone because there was just a new expansion. So I've been playing the new Hearthstone expansion. So they came out with a new card type, which is quest cards. It's one cost cards. They're class specific. They're legendary, which means they're like the rarest type of card. And you will always start with them in your starting hand. So like there's no randomness. If you put this in your deck, you will always start with it. And basically you play it on turn one, and there's some condition. So it's like play X number of minions with Death Rattle, or play X of this type of minion, or most of them are that. Like play this many minions of a certain type. Yeah. And then you get a huge reward at the end of it. So it could be, a giant minion that fills your hand with other minions, so like instantly giving you more gas. It could be a card, a spell that makes all your minions have buffed stats, or stuff like that. So there's these huge rewards. But I actually really, really hate the new mechanic.
Oh, nice.
And the reason is because it's not interactive at all. So, you're encouraged, and the Blizzard team talks a lot about it being important for them, to them, for the game to be interactive. Like you're playing against an opponent, you're reacting to what your opponent is doing. But by putting this quest card in your deck and guaranteeing that you have it on turn one, you're guaranteeing that you are just focused on what you want to do from the start. And generally the quest decks that are seen play, the reward is strong enough that as long as you can get to that reward, there's really nothing your opponent can do about it. So there's no point in you focusing on anything in the game except getting to that reward. So to me, even if it winds up that the mechanic is balanced in that, like, hey, 50% of the time quest decks win and 50% of the time they lose, it feels like a very unhealthy mechanic to me. Because it's encouraging players to be non-interactive. It's encouraging players to just focus on their own you know, what their own thing that they're doing and ignoring their opponent, which is not what the game is about. No. So I'm very disappointed with that new kind of type of card.
Hmm.
Yeah. That said, it's, you know, it's in that sweet spot of the first month after a release where, you know, everything is new. No one's figured out the meta yet. So there's just a bunch of crazy different decks and, you know, that sort of thing happening. And there's, you know, there's a couple early high risers that you're seeing a lot of people copy in terms of deck archetypes.
Well, yeah.
But in general, I'm seeing a lot more variety on the ladder than I was before the expansion, yeah. Which is nice.
So with every new expansion, they dump a whole bunch of shit like out of regular competitive play, right?
Yeah. So they and that's a relatively new thing. This marks the first time that they've done a quote unquote standard format rotation, where standard format is just a basic set of cards and then the last 2 years of expansions.
Okay.
And with Journey to Angoro is the name of the new expansion. With that expansion, they crossed a year threshold and they kicked a bunch of cards out of standard.
Yeah.
Has
that messed with you at all, or are they just kind of kicking out the really unbalanced stuff?
So they are kicking out kind of universally an entire set of cards. So like an expansion from more than 2 years ago effectively is being launched. So the balance cards, the unbalanced cards and everything like that are just gone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely, because I'm mostly a free-to-play player, I'm definitely kind of hiding out in Arena, where you kind of draft cards before playing.
Okay.
Versus relying on my collection, because my collection is pretty weak.
Yeah.
But they did something kind of cool, which is some of the more popular or overpowered cards, they did do kind of a special case and kick out of standard format.
Hmm.
Just because they were overpowered and kind of almost an auto include in too many decks. But instead of making it feel like, I guess I got to start back a little bit. If you want to dust a card, or like delete a card from your account, you get a certain amount of dust from it that you can use to craft other cards.
Okay.
And what they said was, well, we're moving all these cards to wild format, which is the format where literally every card can be played.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want you to feel like you're being punished, or like we don't want to encourage people to dust these cards because they're not available in standard anymore. So we're going to send the card to wild format and then just give you the full dust value of the card.
Oh, wow. So like you still have it for play if you want to do something kind of crazy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Plus you get the normal benefit that you would have gotten from dusting it.
Right.
So that was a really cool move on their part. So I'm sitting on a lot of dust. Once I decide kind of which direction I want to go, I'll be able to craft the cards necessary for that type of deck. But right now I'm hiding out from standard play for the most part.
Right. Right.
So is dust the currency of the game?
There's gold, which you use to buy card packs. And then if you get duplicate cards beyond, if you have more than two copies of a card, you can dust those cards for dust, which is used for crafting. So gold buys packs, dust creates individual cards.
Gotcha. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One moment. David, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, cool. It had been a while since you talked. I wanted to make sure that you were still there.
Oh, my bad.
No, don't worry.
I'm good at putting people to sleep with my Hearthstone talk.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't have much to contribute to that.
That's all good. It is definitely a deep, deep pit that you can fall down and is relatively obscure unless you have kind of committed to it in that way.
Yeah.
I have a newfound respect for that game after starting to play Magic, because I feel like I get it now.
Yeah. I think in understanding things like tempo or value and that sort of thing that you would get out of Magic, I think would benefit you well in Hearthstone.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you decide to jump in, Ben, let me know and I'll be your Sherpa.
They share a designer, right? Like the guy, like one of the key minds behind Magic went to Blizzard and said like, hey, this is my new game. And you know, it's called Hearthstone.
I believe that. I don't know the specific name.
His name is right on the tip of my tongue. I think it's Jordan something. I'll take a look. Richard Garfield. Yeah. There we go. Different.
Oh, there you go. Well, I was going to say while you're taking a look, I'll switch over to my other game. But I think I'll just switch over to the other game since that didn't take you nearly as long as I thought it would.
No. Also, that is a different thing. So oops. Go ahead and move on to your second.
Yeah,
one.
No. Final game is I tried Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time.
Oh yeah, that was on PS Plus recently, right?
Yep, it is a co-op game where you're kind of inside your spacecraft. and like it's a 2D platformer style. You know, the driver or the steering wheel is in one room, the shields are in another room, the guns are in like different rooms based on which side of the ship you want to be on to fire. And you and your co-op partners have to like run around the ship between rooms to control the overall spaceship and get through the world and shoot down enemies and everything. So it's a really, really delightful concept and a ton of fun to play.
Is it like first person FTL?
No, not even first person. It's like I said, a 2D platformer where the level is a spaceship and okay. You like run around the level, to manipulate different controls for the spaceship to move and, you know, move the spaceship around the actual level. So there's a little level within a level going on. Yeah.
It's like it is like two player co-op, almost like what's the name of that phone game where you yell stuff out?
Space Team.
Yeah.
It is totally, because it's like, wait, which room is this control in? And run down there.
Yeah.
Wait, I was looking at your character. Shoot. And but yeah, it's got that FTL vibe and that, like, you know, different controls are in different rooms. Only you're like running and jumping between the rooms. But it's great because your focus kind of zips back and forth between the micro, the ship itself, and then the macro, which is the area of space that you're moving around really, really quickly. And that's something that I have not experienced in a game before. And it's an insanely interesting mechanic because you're like looking at the area around you where you went ahead, and then you're like zooming in and running to the engine room to grab the steering wheel. Mm-hmm. Then you're zooming back out to like, okay, now I actually have to steer myself there. But man, while I was focused in the ship, I noticed five enemies spawned on the other side. So I now got to let go of the steering wheel, zoom back in, run down to the shield room and rotate the shields to be facing those enemies, and then jump off and run and, you know, ask my partner to go to a gun while I go back to the steering room. And it's this great. You're like constantly zoom in, zoom out, zoom in, zoom out. And you're doing that in tandem with a co-op partner, which makes it even more chaotic.
Yeah.
And the mark of a good co-op game in my mind is that you actually have to like communicate as you're playing it. Like, you know, Diablo 3 was a lot of fun in its own way, but we didn't really need to talk.
Right. Right.
We played together. Like there was no, like we're just kind of killing alongside each other.
I mean, do you think that was because Diablo 3 did a very good job of communicating what both of you needed to know visually? Or like, it just doesn't seem like it is like Diablo 3 is the kind of game that requires or demands
we were playing on normal difficulty, and as long as you have the right gear, you can basically like hold X and close your eyes and get through 90% of the levels. Right. And it's fun to do that, but like, you know, it doesn't require a lot of plotting and communication. Right. Whereas in Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time, you're constantly calling out like, wait, you go to the Top Gun, I'll grab the steering wheel, and hold on, can you move the shields? I gotta keep on shooting at this guy. And or I just saw, you know, the what's interesting is like the mini map, you can see kind of the immediate vicinity. But if you want to check the larger map, you actually have to run to a map room.
Okay.
And so it's like this weird, you know, if we want to see where we are in the overall world or plot the next place we want to go, one of us actually has to jump and run to the map room to check the map. And that means one of us is not manning a gun or driving the ship, which is sometimes hard to find a window to do that. So.
Right.
It gets pretty chaotic. And the interesting thing is there's a little penalty built in where if you try to grab a gun or you know, a platform that your partner is already using, there will be like this tussle where your characters fight and the guy, you know, you'll throw the guy out of the chair. And it's like a cute way to do it, but it's a time penalty.
Right.
Not communicating well enough is like you're just going to sit dead in the water as both of you fight over who gets to man the guns.
I mean, this sounds like a game where you really don't have an awful lot of margin to work with.
Yeah.
I like how that probably leads to actual fighting and then real life. So,
yeah, so far it's been pretty productive. So you only have to collect you like every level you spawn into. There's 10, I think it's consistent at 10. Bunnies, because of course it's bunnies that you have to collect to open up the heart warp hole and get out of the level. But you only need to collect 5 of them to leave the level. And then it's like getting the remaining 5 is kind of just bonus points. And so it's a little bit of risk and reward where, you know, once you cross that threshold of 5, it's up to you how much further you want to delve in and how much more risk you want to take to get a higher score.
Okay.
And that worked well for us the first level that we played. And the level took like a half hour to complete. So these are robust levels.
Yeah.
And we kind of 100%ed it. The second level we got like 8 of the 10, and then the last area just got overwhelmed and died.
Yeah.
So we didn't spend too much time. We spent maybe an hour playing the game, but it was an absolute blast. And I'm sure I'll be able to talk more about kind of the more overarching systems between levels later on, because there were a bunch of like ships that were unlockable. We just have the default model ship, which that'll be interesting if we kind of cut our teeth on one model of ship, and then there's a new ship with a completely different layout that will fuck with us to no end, because you got to relearn where everything is. But yeah, it's been fun. Highly, highly encourage people to check it out, especially for couch co-op.
Yeah, is that this month or was that last month?
That's this month. So you've got all, you know, the rest of what, like 20 days or so.
Yeah.
15 days to download it.
I'm waiting for my check, Sony. No, this
have
looks
you,
oh, good.
Have you messed around, Dennis, with Guns of Icarus, any of those games?
I have not.
It's very, very similar idea in terms of being like too few people trying to man, in this case, an airship, although it's a third person shooter, so a lot more with a lot more focus on like ballistic weapons.
Okay, very cool.
But,
is that all, Dennis?
That's it. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, that sounds like an episode to me. Do you all want to button it up?
Put it in the can.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Level, level number 192. We really appreciate it. If you came out to see us at the Midwest Gaming Classic, thank you so much. And thank you to everybody who helped us, including Jenny Palladna, a frequent guest on Abject Suffering and some other shows, I believe. It was a very good time. I'm sorry if you took offense at me saying Richard Garfield worked on Hearthstone. It was a thing I totally thought was plausible.
Stop yelling at Cole.
Please stop yelling at me. but yeah, we would love it if you gave us a rating or review on iTunes, and gosh, please tell your friends about this show.
And your neighbors.
What's that?
And your neighbors.
I mean, you have to by law.
Yeah.
So yeah. Am I forgetting anything?
No, I think we're good.
Okay, cool. I have been Cole Ross. Cole Ross on Twitter. Sorry. Whoops.
I have been Dennis.
Almost.
Or I've been Dennis Furio. At Furio on Twitter.
Why is it that everything I do sets the tenor and the pace? David, just get us out of here.
I've been David Moneysmith on Twitter.
Moneysmith 777, you mean?
Sure.
Okay. And Ben.
I've been Ben Merkel.
God damn it, I'm so angry. I'm so angry.
At Merkel.
Merkel. Merkelizer at Merkelizer on Twitter. Do you see why I do everything the exact same every episode? Because if I don't, this shit happens. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm so tired, you guys. Stick around for some titles. I didn't mean to yank the wheel away from you, Ben.
No, you're good.
you were provoking me.
I think that's what he was cheering for.
I didn't write down any titles that time. It's not that nothing stuck out, it's just that I just didn't write anything down. So I'm curious what you guys have.
Yeah, I got some.
Okay.
I made sure I'm going to start reminding people at the start of the episode, because I've had a couple times where I've forgotten to have a writing implement, by which I mean my phone on me.
I've been taking notes as I go, but it just nothing stuck out.
Yeah. I've got Manifesto with an exclamation point.
Okay.
I've got The Witcher Blood Dragon.
Okay.
I've got Revenge of the Steez Biters.
I feel like
I
was,
have that.
I feel like that was almost that is a title from before. We've definitely done that or suggested it.
And then Newolocracy.
David, what you got?
I've got Karaoke Revolution.
That's an actual last game.
That is?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, made by Konami, PlayStation 2 and Xbox 360, I believe.
Wow. Wow.
It was okay.
River City Ransomware. I also had Revenge of the Sea Spiders.
Okay.
Air D&D. and not that I don't care, just that I can't.
All right. Okay. I also had Air D&D. I have a long one. It's if you're going to be an asshole, you might as well be a creative asshole.
Okay.
I have Kill Your Way In. And I have Please Don't Yell at Me.
Okay, so the two that have the most votes are Revenge of the Steezbiters and Air D&D. So of those two, I like Air D&D the best, although Please Don't Yell at Me. I like that just because it makes fun of me.
It was the third line.
Yeah, it definitely was. How do you guys feel between those two, Air D&D or Please Don't Yell at Me? Or if you have another one you want to strongly put in for consideration.
I'm pretty good with both of those, so I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Air D&D is more self-contained, whereas Please Don't Yell at Me is more contextual. So I'm not sure which one that makes it better for title work, but
yeah.
This is a Coolocracy, so you can decide.
Coolocracy. All right.
The Newolocracy.
let's go with Please Don't Yell at Me.
Cool.
Just because that's how I feel returning to the real world after being in a show where people, it reflects my own insecurities in a realistic and honest way. Mm-hmm. Not to project it on you guys, I know there are other people involved in this besides me, and again, that is my insecurities reflecting on this in a vulnerable way.
I listened to a podcast over the weekend that had Dan Herman that was talking about how he took a level one improv class and then he was like able to talk to people after that. So maybe you should just do some improv. Cool.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Then you can deal with people yelling at you.
Doing that for a while.
Yes,
now,
and them.
What's that, David?
I've debated doing that for a while now, actually.
Yeah, it's improv is fun. You just have to find the right people.
I feel like fun is relative. I feel like a better word would be terrifying.
We're scared straight.
It has the potential to be a rewarding experience.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what we do is a form of improv. We speak extemporaneously.
But I pretend that no one listens to us.
Oh, trust me, if you do improv, nobody's going to be at the show either.
That's true.
That's true for all of us. All right, I've got to go to bed.
Yeah,
easy draw.
Yeah, guys.
Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.